This is Fresh Air. To a lot of people who came of age in the 60s, Alex Chilton is best known as the singer with the box tops, the growly voice on The Letter and Cry Like a Baby. After his AM radio hits, Chilton left the box tops and formed his own band, Big Star. This band was a commercial flop, but their records from the 70s influenced a lot of younger musicians and made Chilton a cult figure. The Big Star albums led Village Voice rock critic Robert Christgau to call Chilton the inventor of self-conscious power pop and to describe his music as prophetically idiosyncratic and breathtakingly original. Rykodisc has just brought out 3 CDs of reissued and previously unreleased Big Star sessions. I spoke with Chilton last May when Rhino Records brought out the anthology 19 Years, a collection of Alex Chilton. We started where Chilton's recording career began, with a number one hit.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. I don't care how much money I gotta spend. Got to get back to my baby again. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter.
Alex Chilton, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks.
I want to talk with you first about the early part of your recording career. You started recording with the Box Tops when you were 16. Can you tell me how you got a chance like that at such a young age?
Well, Memphis was a hotbed of recording activity, Memphis, where I grew up. And, I was asked to join a kind of successful local band who made records at sort of a successful independent producer's studio. And after I'd been with them about a month, we went in the studio and recorded our first hit song. And so it was just something that was easy to fall into. It was sort of like growing up in Hollywood next door to MGM's studio lot or something, you know?
Right. Now, on those early sessions with the Box Tops, you have this real, you know, kind of rough, growly kind of voice. And your voice is completely different on your subsequent work. Did you sing that way at the time, or were you asked to sing that way?
Well, the producer of the band was a strong influence on how we sounded, and he would sort of demonstrate to me how he wanted things sung, and I would pretty much just imitate his singing. His name was Dan Penn, still is Dan Penn.
So did you feel like it wasn't really you on the records in that respect?
In a way, I do. I listen to it and I go, wow, Dan's really in voice today. It sounds more like Dan than it does myself to me.
What was it like handling fame at the age of 16? Were you prepared for it?
Oh, I mean, I don't know that anybody's prepared to handle fame. But then again, I think it would have made a lot more difference if I'd been a true believer in my own fame, too. But as it was, you know, we were kind of doing the bidding of producers and recording songs that were not our own, and it was sort of a job to me. I wasn't such a great fan of our group that I was really caught up in thinking that I was a tremendous great artist or anything at the time.
When did you leave the Box Tops and start your own group?
In 1970, I left the Box Tops, and I guess the next year I started the group called Big Star.
Now, let me ask you about one of the first records that you made on your own after the Box Tops, and this is a song you wrote called Free Again that kicks off the compilation of the Alex Chilton CD that Rhino recently brought out. Do you want to say anything about what was going through your mind when you wrote the song?
Sure. You know, I guess that it's some kind of tune of some kind of liberation as far as the lyrics. But I was a big fan of the Flying Burrito Brothers at the time, and, you know, country rock was sort of something I was getting interested in. So it sounds very country rocky and, you know, with the pedal steel guitar and all.
Let's hear it.
Free again to sing my songs again. Free
when you formed the band Big Star, was there an intended irony behind the name?
I guess so. We'd been together for some time without a name, and somehow there was a store across the street called the Big Star, and while wondering what we should call ourselves, we looked across the street, and somehow it seemed perfect. So I guess, yeah, there was an irony in calling our first album number one record by a group called Big Star. I guess we thought it was funny at the time.
Yeah, well, I guess it kind of stayed funny in the sense that never...
That we never sold any records.
Yeah. Was that a great disappointment to you?
I don't know. I wasn't really counting on selling a whole lot of records or anything, you know. I mean, I thought that someday if we ever sold any records, I might make some money out of it. That myth has been exploded for me also, but you know, I didn't have any great emotional investment in the success or failure of the record in commercial terms.
Yeah, just one of the songs from the early sessions that really still works for you, you know what I mean, that really sums up for you the kind of sound you wanted to get.
Well, my favorite song from the first Big Star record is called In the Street, you know, and I think that that's sort of the best song that I wrote in that period, and somehow it just turned out great, you know, on tape. These things happen sometimes for no good reason.
Let's hear it. Your records ended up being very influential to a lot of bands who were coming up at the time. The Replacements even have a song called Alex Chilton. When did you get a sense of the impact that your music was having on other musicians, even if it wasn't having a big impact commercially?
I guess in the late 70s, I spent some time in New York, and it seemed like everybody I ran into there, you know, claimed to be a fan of the Big Star albums and that sort of stuff. And so, you know, I guess it was around then that I began to see that even though we hadn't sold any records or made any money out of the albums, that they were still some kind of success in a way, you know.
What would they tell you? What kind of specific stories did people tell you about the impact your music had on them?
Mostly what it is young guys coming up who are like learning to play guitar, you know. They seem to reach a certain stage where this record shows them something, you know. It's that I think that's what people go for about it. That's what they all seem to gravitate toward, is this jangly guitar sound that's happening there.
My guest is Alex Chilton. He started his career as the lead singer of the Box Tops. His more obscure subsequent recordings are collected on the CD 19 Years, a collection of Alex Chilton. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Alex Chilton is my guest. A lot of people call your music one of the first albums of power pop. What does that expression mean to you?
I don't know, really. I mean, to me, we were more like, our band was more like the mid-60s British invasion music. You know, it was like three-minute pop songs that were kind of unpretentious and very basically about love and just being a teenager and having a good time. You know, for me, music, once it entered the psychedelic era there in the 60s, I became less interested in it. I like simple pop songs with no real message, you know, just about feeling good and being happy.
Are you ever on the oldies circuit playing?
Absolutely, yeah.
You are?
Yeah, I just I played a gig with the Beach Boys a couple of weeks ago. That was thrilling. I got to even sing Surfin' USA on stage with them. It was the greatest thrill of my career.
So what's it like for you on the oldie circuit? Tell me what you like and dislike about it.
Well, I enjoy meeting all these bands that that I've heard of for so long. You know, like I've played some gigs lately with Question Mark from Question Mark and the Mysterians, and he's a lot of fun. It's interesting to be, you know, hanging around hotel lobbies with Question Mark and that sort of stuff. So, you know, in the summer times, it seems like people offer me some gigs, you know, with 60s bands and things like that. And it's fun to do now and then.
So what do you play?
Well, it's pretty strictly Box Tops material that's called for, and usually it's a five-song set, you know. So it's kind of easy money. You just get up and play five or six tunes at a county fair in Iowa or North Dakota or something, and it's kicky, you know. What can I say?
In the late 70s, you started becoming really part of the punk scene, and you produced records by the Cramps. You produced their first records. What attracted you to that? You'd already been around a while, and a lot of people in it were just coming up.
Yeah, I was, I don't know, everybody since the 60s, it seems like everybody who was still interested in playing rock and roll kept looking for, well, where is the new scene going to be? You know, we've got to have a scene going here so that we can all get involved in it and do good things. And I think that in New York in the mid 70s was the nearest thing to a scene like the London scene or the Los Angeles scene in the 60s, you know. So I sort of gravitated to it because there was an anarchistic sort of edge to it, and it wasn't some corporate showcase of Stepford Wives bands, you know, playing up there. It was real rebellious, good rock and roll that was coming from street level rather than corporate boardroom level.
Do you still think of your rock and roll as being rebellious?
I don't know. I do in a way that it doesn't conform to industry standards, you know. I am a very rebellious person against the society that we live in. I'm not so sure that comes out in a big way in the music that I'm doing at the moment, but one goes through different phases, you know. I mean, just sometimes the most outrageous thing you could do would be to do the most normal thing that anybody could do, which is sort of a plan that I have right now. The next music that I'm making, I'm thinking of making it the most I don't know how to describe it, but some very, very normal, uncontroversial pop tunes, you know, that have nothing much kinky about them except a strong beat and a positive outlook, you know.
You've been so influential on so many people in rock, and yet, you know, you're kind of functioning independently. You don't have a record contract. Mm-hmm. There isn't a big company after you to record something now. What explanation do you have for... I'm always interested when someone of your talents is kind of not more sought after.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It seems to me that the world is full of great musicians who don't have any record companies interested in them. It seems to me that the record companies are interested in bands of teenage guys, you know, with long hair and playing heavy metal music, or whatever the next trend will be, you know. And I'm not really so concerned about it. I mean, I've sort of got my scene going and have carved out a little niche however little it is in the music business, you know, and I managed to play as many gigs as I want every year and make money doing that and make a little money here and there making records, and it's okay with me.
What is that scene?
What is the niche that I've carved out, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I can play in these college towns and get my records played on college radio and that sort of stuff.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Alex Chilton, Ryko Disc has just brought out 3 CDs of re-released and previously unreleased Big Star Sessions. This is Fresh Air.